Day five, the final teams on the Locked On NBA season preview. The top seeds in each conference? Question mark. We'll talk Warriors and Raptors, Spurs and Timberwolves, Wizards and Bucks. A loaded six to wrap up 30 teams in 5 days on the Locked On NBA season preview from the experts of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm David Locke. It is the fifth and final day of the Locked On NBA season previews. We'll wrap up 30 teams in 5 days, six teams a day. Hopefully you've been playing along. If you're joining us for the first time, because we have such a great lineup of teams today, we'll do the Toronto Raptors, then the Milwaukee Bucks, two of the most fascinating teams, then the Wizards, who are really interesting as well. We'll go to the West, Minnesota, and hopefully the world hasn't changed in the time we're doing this, the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs. Those are the six teams we're talking about today on the Locked On NBA season preview. The other 24 teams have all been done already in 1, 2, 3, and 4. Feel free to grab them. And the format is as follows. We'll start off with our local expert of the Locked On Podcast Network, giving us a breakdown on five or six questions they've all been given. Best case, worst case storylines, players whose career trajectory are most in jeopardy, players will think of differently, and then where they think the things will stand at the end of the year. I'll jump in, share with you our Locked On Podcast Network points gain statistic. Points gain looks at the average, the amount of possession scoring opportunities you use in a game, how an average player would use them, and compares the performance of that player and judges teams on that basis. And then finally, Josh Lloyd of the super popular Locked On Fantasy Basketball, the number one fantasy basketball show for you, will stop by and give his take. So that's where we stand. The Toronto Raptors, oh, we are north, have Kawhi Leonard. What's the thoughts on where they stand from Sean Woodley, the host of Locked On Raptors?
Hey, what's up? This is Sean Woodley from Locked On Raptors, here to preview your 2018-19 Toronto Raptors for the Locked On NBA preview show. A couple big storylines coming in, obviously. First off is sort of a smaller one. Nick Nurse is the new head coach. Dwayne Casey was here for 7 years. Oversaw a lot of growth and sort of oversaw a transformation from the Raptors being just like an outpost franchise nobody cared about into something very relevant. He's gone. Nick Nurse is in. It's going to be a big test to see if Nick Nurse can kind of continue what Dwayne Casey built here. And then there's that other thing about Kawhi Leonard being on the Raptors now. Yeah, that's a thing. The Raptors traded for him, dealt DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl along with a protected first-round pick, got Kawhi and Danny Green back in the trade, and that is going to be a topic of conversation all season long. Raptors fans have been clamoring for years for the national media to talk about them. They're going to be talked about this season, and Kawhi Leonard's free agency will be an inevitable topic of conversation all season long. The Raptors, I think, are going into this looking at this as a one-year all-in type of season. And whether or not they can keep him, I don't know if that really came into their calculus for the trade. I think the move made a lot of sense, even if they don't keep him beyond this season. But obviously, their sort of courtship of him and trying to keep him around long term is going to be a through line for this entire year. What's got to happen for this team to reach its best case scenario, which, you know, I think I would say, and I think the Raptors would say too, is a finals appearance. I think this is what the season is about right now. For that to happen, a few things have to go the Raptors' way. Obviously, we're not supposed to say health as well as sort of our reason for a team getting to its ceiling, but in the case of Kawhi Leonard, that's very much a reality here. Kawhi Leonard is a guy who, when he's healthy, has MVP upside. He's one of the best defensive players we've ever seen in the NBA, period. Obviously, he didn't reach that level last season because he played 9 games and had the weird injury, and whether or not he's at full, you know, 100% Kawhi Leonardness this season is going to really be a big dictator of how the Raptors end up doing this season. Also, some other things have to happen too, because the East is not exactly strong, but it's strong at the top with the Celtics and Sixers right there. And the Raptors have to have some development from their younger guys at the end of the bench. You know, Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, these guys were really nice stories last season and were great pieces of depth for the Raptors. They're going to need those guys to be full-on contributors this season who are consistent night to night and not really dependent on being in the sort of construct of a bench unit to be, you know, reliable. They have to be able to be subbed in, to play crunch time, to start potentially, and that's going to be a thing that if those guys really sort of coalesce into, you know, real reliable NBA NBA players this season, maybe even sort of pseudo-stars in the case of a couple of those guys, that's really going to help the Raptors get to their ceiling. The worst case scenario is, you know, the absolute worst case scenario is that things go poorly, there's no chemistry, and the Raptors opt to trade Kawhi Leonard at the deadline because they're trying to salvage something for that from that deal. I don't think that's likely. I think Kawhi, from all accounts, seems pretty up to speed. He's not, like, you know, flaking or anything on the Raptors. He's played pretty well in the preseason so far. He looks good and committed for this season at least. The more realistic worst case scenario is this team just kind of craps out in the playoffs again in the second round or something like that, comes across a team like Philadelphia or Boston that's maybe a little bit ahead of the curve, and the Raptors lose in the second round, and then Kawhi Leonard bolts because it's not enough winning to keep him or whatever it is, and you know, you're looking at a team that has no Kawhi Leonard, has Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka on the brink of being expiring deals, and you're probably facing a rebuild. If that's the case, I think the Raptors had that in mind going into this trade for Kawhi, and I think the deal actually makes it easy to pivot to a rebuild if things go terribly this season. So that'll be it. If they just can't get past the level of the playoffs that they have for the last few seasons, this might be the end of the Raptors being really good, at least for some time. If there's a player that's most likely to be thought of differently at the end of the season, I think it's Pascal Siakam. The reports coming out about him from his runs in LA to the preseason to training camp, it's all very encouraging. So far in the preseason, he's hit a couple threes. That was sort of his limiting factor last season. He just shot terribly from three. He was about a 20% three-point shooter on a pretty high volume. That can't be the case if he wants to take that next step, but already in preseason, we're seeing Siakam, you know, run fast breaks as the primary ball handler, run the offense as a ball handler with guys like Fred VanVleet spotting up off the ball, and his playmaking is really starting to become refined. And if he can become more of a sort of active participant in the offense as opposed to just kind of being a bit part who hangs around and does athletic things once in a while in the background, the Raptors are going to be a much better team for it. Pascal Siakam has a ton of talent. It's just he got to put it together a little bit, and the shooting needs to come around, but the court vision and just the improvement from his first season, where he was one of the worst players, you know, rotation players in the entire NBA, has been remarkable. So keep an eye on Pascal Siakam by the end of the season. I would not be shocked if we were looking at him as like the third best player on the Raptors after Kyle Lowry and Kawhi Leonard. As far as a guy whose career trajectory might be altered by this season, good or bad, Serge Ibaka might be on that list. This is going to be a big year for Serge. I think he's kind of moving into a different phase of his career right now. And the Raptors, I think this season, are really going to try to play Serge at center a lot. He might not even start. He might come off the bench behind Jonas Valanciunas and just be the full-time backup center. And if that's the case, how he does in those situations is going to dictate whether or not he gets to hang around in the league beyond this contract he's on. If he's going to be a power forward who is not going to be, you know, a nightly contributor defensively, who's going to be sort of inconsistent with his shot, who's going to be a bad playmaker, who turns the ball over a whole lot, that's not going to bode well for his future. But if he can be a steady backup center who can run with a bench unit, who can defend the rim the way he used to back in Oklahoma City, maybe not with the same block totals that he had back in the day, but if he just has the same effectiveness as a rim protector and a deterrent, and he can hit some threes and provide some offense to a second unit that was kind of lacking for half-court offense last season, that's going to be huge for Serge. And if not, his career really could be over before very long. The next question's easy. Rookies who will have an impact and how much? There are not really any rookies on this team. This is an older team. The Raptors have traded a lot of first-round picks in the last couple seasons. Don't have their pick this coming year. Assuming they finish in the top 10 in the league, it goes to the Spurs for the Kawhi deal. So no rookies either this year or potentially next year for this part of the preview. And last question here, the best guess on how the season ends. This is so tough. I've gone back and forth. I think they're making the conference finals at the very least, and then it's going to come down to probably a matchup with the Celtics. And at this point, I'd probably bet in favor of the Celtics winning that series, but every time I do that, I come back to the idea that Kawhi Leonard, at his peak, is the best player in that series, and it's not particularly close. And we've seen how much one player can swing a series. The Raptors have been a victim of this in the past with LeBron James. Obviously, Kawhi's not LeBron, but he's one of the closest approximations to that in the league. So I would bet Celtics right now without having seen the Raptors play for a full season, but I'm fully expecting by the end of the year for that just to be a coin flip, you know, of a series, and we'll see what happens. It might come down to who has home court advantage, really. So right now, I'll say a tough 7-game loss in the conference finals that could easily be flipped to a win after we see a little bit more with this team. And as that evolution for the team goes on all season, you can listen to me, Sean Woodley, on Locked On Raptors every single day.
Thank you, Sean. Points gained, which assumes Kawhi Leonard is the player of two seasons ago, not the nearly MVP player of a year ago or the one who didn't play last year, and assumes productivity under Nick Nurse, loves this team. The Warriors, who we'll talk about coming up as a group's points gained, is way better than anyone else in the NBA. The second best points gained on a roster is the Toronto Raptors at 5.7 points gained a given night over average. The third best team in the NBA offensively is at 3.9. So there's a huge gap. The system loves Toronto. Number one offensive team in the Eastern Conference by far. Number two offensive team by a pretty good margin overall. Good defensive team, have them as the second best defensive team behind Boston in the East and the third best defensive team behind Boston and the Jazz in the NBA. And by a good margin, the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Actually, see the margin between the Warriors and the Jazz or Rockets as the same as the margin between the Raptors and the Celtics, 76ers, Bucks, or Pacers. So this assumes Kawhi's healthy. This assumes Nick Nurse isn't a disaster. And the Raptors are heavily favored to be the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, according to points gained. The Bucks are really interesting as well. We'll get to them in a second. But first, let's hear from Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball of what he would do with these Raptors players.
A new look Toronto Raptors team, new coach, new star. Kawhi Leonard was a top five guy in San Antonio before last season. And while I think he can get back to that level, you don't even need to take him that high. He's currently being drafted at pick 12 on Yahoo and on ESPN. I think that's a fine risk to take. Kyle Lowry dropped off a bit last season. I think you're getting him at the end of the second, start of the third round is probably the right spot. Maybe he takes a couple more rest days, eases off a little bit with the minutes somewhat, with capable backups like DeLon Wright and Fred VanVleet in town. Jonas Valanciunas is the interesting one. Always been minimized by Dwayne Casey. Nick Nurse has been talking him up. And if he can get an extra 2-3 minutes per night, now he played only 22 minutes per night last season. If he gets to 25 or 26, a real shot to shake the top 50. I think Serge Ibaka is a downside type of a guy. I think he struggles to make the top 100 this season. He's being drafted well inside that zone so far, and I do think that he has a real chance to move to the bench so that Valanciunas and Anunoby man those two front court positions. Pascal Siakam is also, I think, a chance to play more minutes than Ibaka this season. Minimal chance, but a possibility. I like him as a late-round guy. Same with VanVleet. And Anunoby, probably one season away from being a solid fantasy contributor, more of a deeper league guy, but I do think that his overall ability is pretty enticing as he moves forward in leagues.
Thank you, Josh. And you can get his show, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, a regular in the top shows on iTunes Sports Podcast. Does great work. Catch Josh on Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Tell your smart speaker to play Locked On Fantasy Basketball or on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. I believe that Milwaukee or Indiana will finish in the top three in the Eastern Conference. Let's find out if the Bucks hosts of Locked On Bucks, Eric and Frank, think it could be Milwaukee under Mike Budenholzer.
This is Eric Name from The Athletic Wisconsin, and joining me is Frank Madden, the founder of BrewHoop.com, and my good friend from Locked On Bucks, and we are here to discuss the Bucks and give you a season preview for them. And Frank, I guess a pretty easy one for you here. What are the two or three biggest storylines going into this season?
Yeah, lots of optimism going into a season in Milwaukee, which feels like we've been building towards this for a while. In our 25, 30 years as Bucks fans, it's a bit strange to feel this level of optimism, but a brand new building, Fiserv Forum, Mike Budenholzer taking over as head coach of the team from the, let's just say, less than successful Jason Kidd / Joe Prunty era that ended last year. And I think, it really starts with Mike Budenholzer and what he's going to bring to this team, how he can improve this team from a really underachieving team defensively over the last few years, a team that was pretty solid offensively, but might have even more opportunity to get better. We're already seeing examples of the kind of pace and space style and the passing that Bud wants to bring to this roster that we really didn't see the last couple of years. And I think the big question, can that translate into a Giannis MVP season? He really wasn't that far off last year. I don't think Giannis needs to reinvent himself. He doesn't need to become a knockdown three-point shooter to be an MVP. I think mainly just the Bucks need to actually finally deliver on their promise and, hopefully win 50-plus games for Giannis to be in that conversation and take the next step in his evolution. And obviously, certainly his fate, if he can be MVP, might be alongside Mike Budenholzer being a contender for Coach of the Year, which he's already won once before. And that kind of leads us to, what is the best case scenario for this team, Eric?
I think when you go through it, it is, and I guess for the Bucks, you do have to set lower goals because they have been futile for so long. But, you know, you win your first playoff series since 2001. I think that's kind of where it starts. Winning 50 games would be great. And best case scenario is an Eastern Conference Finals trip, I would believe. So when you really look at it, I guess what leads you to that, to me, is the offense, all the things that you've talked about. It's more creative. There's more freedom. It's more free flowing. It makes everyone more difficult to guard. I think that leads to a best case. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I'm not sure how much different Mike Boonholzer is than Jason Kidd. He does tend to be more aggressive defensively, but you know, if they're able to find a way to be more aggressive within reason, and they're able to find ways that make this entire thing a little bit more successful, I think that'd be best case scenario. So you're looking at an offense that's top five, a defense that somehow manages to get into the top 10, and that's how you have your best case scenario season, where you're making an Eastern Conference Finals trip. Okay, conversely, Frank, how do you get to a worst case scenario?
Jason Kidd rises from the dead and returns to the sideline. Okay, maybe not. That wouldn't be a good thing, but certainly that might be in Bucks fans' nightmares. I think if we throw out sort of the, you know, Giannis season-ending injury type scenario, which is obviously the real worst case scenario, but for a downside scenario that doesn't involve just major injuries, it probably just begins with kind of just the Bud system not quite working as well as Bucks fans are hoping. You know, maybe offensively they don't have quite as much more upside than what we saw last year when they were a top 10 team, and you know, Giannis, Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, those guys are bucket getters. They were efficient last year. I think this year they need a lot of other guys to step up as well. Maybe this that doesn't happen. Bledsoe in a contract year. Yeah, he's coming up on his age 29 season. Obviously, you know, the Bucks hope that he fits in well with Budenholzer's system, has a big year, and, you know, with that eye on a contract next year, but maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't mesh well with Bud in a contract year. Maybe he goes on the trade block. Maybe he kind of throws their backcourt into disarray. That's certainly a question. And then, you know, I think defensively, look, this has been a team that's been floating around towards the bottom 10 of the league the last 3 years under Jason Kidd. I don't think that they are a below average team talent-wise defensively, especially now with Jabari Parker gone. But who knows? They still have to go out there and actually play defense, execute. We've seen them play a pretty vanilla, conservative zone drop style defense with a lot of big guys. They have a lot of big guys on this roster. But maybe that isn't the cure to all their ills defensively. Again, it's going to be probably a work in progress with some new guys coming in and a new coach. So, again, maybe that is the worst case scenario. And, if that's the case, you know, maybe this is just a 40-win team. That was their point differential last year. They were a 40-win team by point differential. So, again, maybe we're just overrating this roster. I don't think we are, but certainly there might be some scenarios where the pieces just don't fit that well. And again, maybe Budenholzer is not the panacea that Bucks fans are hoping for. Let me ask you this. So we talked a bit about some of these players. We think we know a lot about these guys since there's been a fair bit of continuity from the past couple of years on this Bucks roster. But for those listening, especially who might not see the Bucks every day, who is the player who is most likely to be thought of differently at the end of the season?
I mean, there's some part of me that thinks Brook Lopez is really going to have a solid year and recoup some of his value and maybe make himself a more attractive free agent next year. But I don't know if that entirely works out. And I guess this is something that I struggle with because I think both you and I think quite a bit of Chris Middleton as a basketball player. We both think he's quite good. And I mean, maybe we're not quite Ben Golliver and Rob Mahoney on this one, but we do think that he really is right on the borderline of those like top 30, top 25 players in the NBA. Like he's in that area. And I think every year, You see these preseason rankings come out. You see people talk about Chris Middleton and you don't think of him as that guy. And I do wonder if, you know, maybe if the Bucks get off to a hot start, maybe there's an all-star season in here for Chris Middleton. If you kind of keep going through that, then maybe, you know, last year he did average 25-4, I think, or maybe 26-4. I can't remember exactly. But he had a great year last year, and most people just kind of think of, oh, you know, the Bucks have Giannis, and then they don't have another star. Like, they don't have another guy that's he's not good enough. Like, they'll just never have that guy. And I guess I do wonder if with Mike Budenholzer encouraging him to shoot more threes, with him having more space on the floor, if all of a sudden at the end of the season we're thinking, oh, yeah, Chris Middleton, he's a second star. That makes sense. For you, Frank, who do you think of kind of in the opposite way? Whose career trajectory is most impacted this season? Middleton feels like maybe just a perception kind of thing, but whose career trajectory do you see changing this year?
Well, I think, no pun intended, but I think it is a make or break year for Thon Maker. Entering his third season, he's a guy that, you know, showed a lot of flashes of what could be an interesting combination of three-point shooting and defensive mobility in the playoffs in his first year in particular. Big things expected of him coming into last year. He gets the starting spot coming out of camp and then really didn't deserve it. Was just very disappointing during the regular season. Continue to show major issues as far as, you know, just reading the game defensively, defensive rebounding, and then offensively just really not showing any real development from, you know, just an offensive skill standpoint. His three-point shooting regressed last year and really doesn't have the kind of skill level or feel or strength to be really an impact guy in other facets of the game offensively. So certainly entering his third year, with, as you mentioned, Brook Lopez now around, you've also got John Henson on this roster. You, as of now, still have Tyler Zeller and Christian Wood on this roster. And, you know, we've been talking for years about Giannis potentially playing more center. If Ersan Ilyasova could play some center, there is a ton of competition for big man minutes right now. Neither of us thinks Thon Maker can play the four given his lack of kind of skill level offensively. And so it's really kind of a high pressure situation there. I don't think they're going to give him charity minutes at center this year. He's really have to earn them, and he's got a lot of competition. And certainly if he falls out of the rotation entirely, he's going to be in a weird spot entering the fourth year of his rookie contract with, you know, a guy that maybe a year or two ago we thought of as having a lot of potential, potentially the Bucks' long-term answer as maybe a 3-and-D role-playing center starter. Now, I'm not really so sure. I'm definitely not bullish on Thon kind of breaking out in the way that a lot of people thought a year ago maybe. So certainly for him, the pressure is on to try to prove us wrong. As you think about rookies who will have an impact, there's only one rookie on this roster. It's Dante DiVincenzo. What do you see from him this year?
It's really interesting because I don't know that either of us love his game all that much. I don't think we're incredibly bullish on what he's going to become, but it does appear like Mike Budenholzer is pretty bullish on him. And he's been the first sub of just about every preseason game. He seems to be getting a lot of run. He seems to be trusted quite a bit by Mike Budenholzer. So, I'm not sure that in this first season, unless he really starts to stroke it from deep, like I don't know if he can make a huge impact. Not that many rookies are impactful, but I do think we're going to see him maybe get a little bit more time than either of us would have guessed going into the season. And we'll see if he can find a way to hit shots consistently. But to me, that's how he has an impact. And I'm just not sure that he'll do it. Frank, let's wrap this up. Your best guess on how the season ends.
As we alluded to, the biggest enemy of the Milwaukee Bucks has been expectations over the years. Whenever they're expected to take a step forward, they seem to fall back. Whenever they have no expectations, they seem to actually exceed them. So I say this with bated breath, that my expectation is that they will actually win a playoff series this year. I think we both agree this is a team that has the talent and, you know, again, looks to finally be putting it together, especially in an East that, you know, doesn't have a ton of talent outside of the top three. So I think I would certainly say I'd expect them to finish in the four slot, get home court in the first round, win a first round playoff series. And then as far as, you know, how many wins does it take to get there and how well can this team do? I said on the Dunk Down podcast with our friend Nate Duncan, I couldn't quite get to 50 wins just because of my paranoia as a longtime Bucks fan. I said 49. I know you're more bullish. Are you willing to take the leap to 50 plus wins? Because I feel like, yeah, I got the itch, but you're going to go, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll do it. They'll win 50 games this year. I just think last year, 44 games that was them underperforming. They were better than a 44 win team. Unfortunately, they had a bad coach in Jason Kidd and some injuries that hit at the wrong time and really crippled their chances. So yes, I will happily take them to win 50 games this year. And that's okay. We can all look at this and laugh at Eric and his general optimism about a Bucks franchise that has been tortured for the entirety of his life, but that's okay. I can handle that. So, I think that's going to be it for us. I'm not Frank Madden. I'm Eric Name. That's Frank Madden. This has been your season preview for the Milwaukee Bucks from Lockdown Bucks.
Well, I might be able to get you to 50 wins. First off, congratulations to Eric for his new position with The Athletic. There's some just simple math numbers things that are going on here for the Bucks that Jason Kidd did not do. The Bucks defense, if you look at points gained in regards to defense, where you allow the opponents to take shots from, ranked 30th in the NBA last year. They were 1.77 points a night behind league average. Just if everyone took average shots, they allowed a tremendous amount of corner threes. They did not deny the rim. They allowed 10% of their opponent's shots to be corner threes, which was the most in the NBA. And then on the offensive side of things, they were okay, but Mike Budenholzer so far through preseason has been the exact opposite. 41% of their shots at the rim and 41% of their shots as threes, which would be a huge jump. Points gained sees a lot of this jump. Third best offensive team in the Eastern Conference. Defensively, it's really hard to figure out. Atlanta was one of the great defensive teams in the league for a while because of their system. Can Budenholzer do the same thing? I've projected that there are some personnel problems there, so I have them as 12th defensively. It gets them as the fourth best team in the conference, but I mean, inches away from Boston and Philadelphia. So if I were to project, had to take somebody other than those three, Milwaukee would be the team that I would suspect jumps into the top three. Otherwise, their home court advantage, and in the second round, probably playing the Toronto Raptors in the playoffs, unless if they don't get by Indiana. Josh Lloyd has got some interesting takes on fantasy because this is a much different team under Mike Budenholzer.
The Milwaukee Bucks, they've got Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think he is being a little bit overrated this season, currently ranked number one on ESPN. No reason for that, in my opinion. Number four on Yahoo at the moment. And I do worry, Mike Budenholzer won't be quite as aggressive in the playing time that Joe Prunty and Jason Kidd were, playing him 37 minutes a night with a sore knee. Budenholzer's always been a little bit cautious in terms of playing time, so that could drop him back. We know there is a lack of threes from Giannis as well. Obviously, really still solid in the first round, in that middle to upper portion of the first round, but at pick three or even pick one, I think it's a little bit too high. Eric Bledsoe, really underrated, 56th on ESPN, 43rd on Yahoo. Top 25 guy last season, no reason to think that can't happen again this year, while Chris Middleton, another top 30 type of a player for this coming season. He's being drafted right in the right zone. I think Brook Lopez is a significant upgrade at center. Maybe won't be as good as he was in Brooklyn, but should be better than he was in Los Angeles. Really strong as a late round type of pick, a high free throw percentage shot blocking guy. There aren't many of those guys around, and Lopez can be that guy in the 80 to 100 type of zone in drafts. And then not many other draftable guys. Malcolm Brogdon looks to be the starting shooting guard, but I'm not sure he's actually got top 100 potential. I know for a fact Tony Snell doesn't, so even if he starts, Snell is not going to be anywhere near the fantasy-relevant zone. And Sterling Brown and Ersan Ilyasova are maybe some deeper league guys that we can pay some attention to, with Ersan Ilyasova getting backup four and maybe even backup center minutes for the Bucks this season.
Thank you, Josh. We have one more Eastern Conference team to do, the Washington Wizards, before we head to the Warriors, the Timberwolves, and the Spurs. Remember Vivid Seats. If you're going to a new event and you're a first-time customer with Vivid Seats, you can get $20 off a purchase of $200 or more. So go to Apple Store, go to the Google Play Store, and download the app Vivid Seats. 100% guaranteed. First-time customers receive $20 off a purchase of $200 or more. Our final Eastern Conference stop is the Washington Wizards. A bit of an anomaly. Let's see what they can do.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on our special NBA preview, Locked On Wizards, part of the Locked On Network, your daily NBA news from local experts. I'm Becca Winkert, also known as @BeccaMVP on Twitter, here with my co-host, Quentin Mayo, @TOQM_. And today we're here to talk about our off-season storylines, kind of how it played out for us, and I think our biggest storyline that happened for us this offseason is acquiring Dwight Howard and getting rid of Marcin Gortat.
Absolutely.
So that's basically the biggest thing that has happened with the Washington Wizards, along with acquiring Austin Rivers, who is going to be huge for our bench. So we're pretty excited about that. And we did not re-sign Mike Scott, who was part of our bench. However, we have gotten a much deeper bench this summer. And Quentin, what do you have to say about Dwight Howard? Like, what are your concerns? What is the overview, the feel for him?
I think the feel for Wizards fans, and as well as any team that has acquired Dwight Howard over the years, they've been extremely excited up front. He's obviously Superman. Regardless of how old he's getting, he's still a physical specimen. He's long, athletic, and he still has a lot of game. And I guess once we move into the best case scenario, I get to talk a little more extensively about him. But on paper, he looks like the perfect fit. If he could be an improvement from Marcin Gortat, that is definitely what the Wizards are asking for. But you have to take into account the personality and the things that go on behind closed doors and in the locker room that scares some teams away from him, which is why he's on what I think the fifth team in or fourth team in 4 years. So we'll have to see about how that goes. He looks good and he speaks well in press conferences and things of that nature. But as the season progresses and he gets into that, we'll go from there.
Part of the reason why we got rid of Marcin Gortat, who is now on the Los Angeles Clippers, we decided to get rid of him because of the locker room issues between him and John Wall, and also the rest of the team who was struggling in the locker room mentally. And Dwight Howard is not known to be a leader in the locker room. He's not known to be necessarily, you know, gets along with everyone, kind of easygoing. There has been stories about him having issues in the past. So I think the best case scenario for Dwight Howard is that he gels in with John Wall and Bradley Beal. He knows his role on the team because he's not coming to this team to be the star. He's not coming to be the leader. He's coming to help John Wall, you know, get the screens, the pick and rolls. He's here to provide his veteran ways, but also kind of take a step back and let John Wall be the leader, because there can only be one alpha, and that can't be, you know, the three of them. They have to make it work
right
that way.
And that's something that Dwight Howard has struggled with, and he's come out and said that, like, going from being arguably the best center in the league at one point to, as he gets older and through injuries, having to fall back and be more of a assistance instead of being the focal point of the offense. It's hard for guys of his caliber to go through that transition. So it's definitely going to be something to watch, especially, as you said, coming in with Wall and Bill, who respectively have had their like alpha dog storylines going on between them, especially when Wall went down. There was not rumors, but word is that it's Bill's team now because they were doing better without John and things of that nature. So for Howard to come in, and I'll just play off of you, you went from the mentality standpoint. I say the best case scenario would be that he replicates his numbers from last season in Charlotte. I think he had an incredible season last year. He could have been an all-star. He lost an all-star appearance to Al Horford. But when we look at the stats, Dwight Howard averaged 16.6 points per game and 12.5 rebounds. Gortat averaged eight points per game and 7.5 rebounds. And Al Horford, who was an all-star instead of Dwight Howard, he only averaged 12 points and 7 rebounds. They both averaged about a block and a half. So on paper, Dwight Howard's numbers were better than an all-star selection in Al Horford, but he played in a small market in Charlotte. You know, they weren't the most successful team, so he was overlooked. So if he can come close to that 16 and 12 mark, or maybe even 15 and 10, that's a vast upgrade over what the Wizards got from Marcin Gortat last season.
I'm right there with you, and I think the worst case scenario to come out of acquiring Dwight Howard would be that they can't, the three stars, I think, Bradley Beal, John Wall, and Dwight Howard, and Otto Porter, they can't mesh together and make it work on a team level, and we're back at square one, because that's the reason why Marchand, along with being, you know, an older player in the NBA. That's why, you know, we really had to make that trade, was because of the chemistry. So for Dwight, if he did not work with the team, because like you said, everything is perfect on paper, there's no reason why this team shouldn't perform at a high level, you know, getting up there, getting past the first round in the playoffs. But that would be the worst case scenario. And there's a lot of new players on the team this season. But who would be the player that you would think people would think differently at the end of the season when it's all said and done?
I had two, but I think I'm going to go with one that we've been raving about from, you know, the first preseason game to now, and that's Jan Mahimi. He's a guy who took up a lot of cap space and is still taking up a lot of cap space for the Wizards, and he's always been injury stricken. He's never played a full season, and he's just been a waste of money, to say the least. So the fact that he went an entire offseason without injury, he got a full offseason to work with the team, he's working on his jump shot, he's well conditioned, he looks really good in preseason. And if the Wizards can get a good productive center off the bench to back up Dwight Howard, this team can move the depth of that bench to even higher than they expected it to be when they brought in Jeff Green and Austin Rivers. So if Jan Mahimi can perform to the level that he's displaying in preseason, that is one player that Wizards fans will finally feel better about at the end of the season.
I completely agree. I'm really excited to see where Jan takes us this season, considering he's been working on his three-point shot. He's remained healthy during the offseason, and I just feel like he's developed really well as a player. And there's another thing that I've been wondering about. So after this season, whether good or bad happens, who do you think will who do you think career-wise is going to be most impacted?
I think it's going to be Kelly Oubre.
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah, he's in a contract year, and this is a guy that, you know, since he came into the league, he hasn't really gotten a grasp of his offensive game, which has been a focal point that he's trying to show, not even just to the Wizards, but if he does not come back and re-sign with this team, he's going to want some money, so he's auditioning for a job around the league. And if people just look at him and say, well, he's a feisty guy, not extremely talented on defense, and barely above average on offense, we're not going to give him any money. So he has to really do his thing and be a help to this team and a solid player. He can't lose his temper. He has to come and finally transition from a college basketball player to a pro's pro. So he's going to have a lot on his plate this season, and that's my player. That's my nominee.
We're on the same page this episode.
Always.
Always. So our rookie, Troy Brown, also known as the Army Swiss Knife because he basically can do everything at least a decent level, if he makes the team, I think he's going to have a great impact because he's one of those guys that can kind of fill in for anybody, almost anybody in a way. And I'm excited to see how he will pan out. And so when the season ends, given everything that we just said, how do you feel? Where do you think we'll place?
I think the Wizards finished fourth. I think they finished fourth this season. Not too high, but not too low. I mean, the middle of that, the Eastern Conference is pretty tricky. I went Celtics 1, Raptors 2, and the Sixers 3. Just because the Celtics obviously they're probably the most talented team in the league. The Raptors replaced DeMar DeRozan with Kawhi Leonard. And then the Sixers just have a lot of young talent, even though they lost some pieces. So, like that 4, 5, and 6 range with the Wizards, the Pacers, and the Bucks, that's where I placed the Wizards this season.
How do you think we'll do in the playoffs?
Whew. That's a great question. I think this team has the depth and the veteran leadership and athletic ability to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, who they face there, whether it be the Celtics or the Raptors, it's going to be a very tough test. But right now, I just haven't seen enough, and we also have not seen Dwight Howard play yet in preseason, so we don't know how the dynamic is going to work. But I'd say falling in the Eastern Conference Finals to either the Raptors or the Celtics. I'm going to probably lean towards the Celtics. The Raptors aren't getting there. Sorry.
Quentin, always great insight. And you can find him at TOQM _. I'm Becca, and you can find me at Becca MVP. And thank you so much for listening to our NBA preview. This has been Locked On Wizards, part of the Locked On Network, and we will see you soon.
See you.
It's the year everyone's decided not to pump the Wizards up as the team that's going to break through. Points gained generally agrees. John Wall's inefficiency shows up here. Bradley Beal's had an amazing preseason with the freedom of movement rules. We have them ranked as the sixth best offense in the Eastern Conference and the eighth best defense, which gives them the sixth seed. That's kind of what everybody expects and is projected for them. The Eastern Conference, here's how we have it. Toronto is one by a large margin. Philadelphia at two. Boston at three. The very little difference there. Milwaukee at four. Very different, little difference. And five, the Indiana Pacers. The Washington Wizards at six. The Miami Heat at seven. And then our surprise is Cleveland at eight. We'll see whether that can hold. Charlotte at nine and Brooklyn at 10. With not very much discrepancy. Actually, Charlotte and Brooklyn tied at nine, excuse me. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Nets didn't make the playoffs. That wraps up our Eastern Conference. Let's get one last fantasy check on the East from Josh.
Looking for a bounce back year for John Wall. He'd been a consistent top 12 fantasy guy in the years before last season, really dropped off with that knee injury. Hopefully he's fully fit and healthy, back to a 20-10 type of guy, a strong second round guy. Bradley Beal is a late second, early third sort of a player. While Otto Porter, I think Dwight Howard's arrival will impact Porter, dropping his rebounds a little bit and cutting into his already low usage numbers. Porter's being overdrafted a bit on Yahoo 35th, but being underdrafted on ESPN at 73. He fits in the middle in that 45 to 55 type of range. Dwight Howard is only really useful in a points league or punt free throw percentage league. Ranked 39th on ESPN makes no sense. 60th on Yahoo is about right. I do think that some of his usage from last season will drop off. And I do worry about Markieff Morris as well. I think he's not going to be a draftable player. Nor is Kelly Oubre. While Austin Rivers had plenty of fantasy value last season, that won't be the case on this current Wizards team.
That wraps up our Eastern Conference. Let's go to the top of the West. The defending world champions, Charles Hamilton, is the host of Locked On Warriors.
What's up, everybody? This is Charles T. Hamilton, the host of Locked On Warriors. Got a little Locked On NBA season preview for the Golden State Warriors for your back-to-back champs, your reigning defending NBA champions. Got seven questions to get to here, and I'm going to knock those out for you right now. What are the two or three biggest storylines going into camp? For me, the biggest storylines going into camp are DeMarcus Cousins, Pat McCaw, 15th roster spot, and one I'm going to stay away from because it's not going to be resolved until the offseason is the Kevin Durant contract situation. I just think it's a waste of time to worry about someone's contract in October of 2018 when it won't be resolved until July of 2019. So is it a storyline? Sure, but we're not going to learn anything as far as whether he's re-signing or not until July, basically. So the first one, DeMarcus Cousins, how's he look? Where's his health at? Since it's training camp, we already knew he wasn't going to be ready for training camp in the start of the season. There's not a lot of updates there. I think they're pretty pleased with his progression and his rehab. And, you know, gun to their head, I think they would say he's ahead of schedule. But they're not going to say that. They're tempering any expectations with him. And I would expect him back mid-January, honestly. And they're not going to rush him back, and they're also not going to hold him back either. Once he's 100%, they're going to bring him back. But that being said, it's once he's 100%. They're not going to bring him back when he can play at 85%. They're going to wait till he's fully healthy, and then he'll be playing. The Pat McCaw situation, he still hasn't signed his qualifying offer. It expires October 1st at midnight. I'm sure you guys will be hearing this well after that, so we'll know what the situation is, at least as far as his qualifying offer is concerned. But I don't know. I don't know what his deal is. I don't know what leverage he has. Maybe he has a deal with another team kind of under the table where if he can become an unrestricted free agent that they'll sign him to. But right now, what he's doing doesn't make sense to me. He doesn't have leverage. But he's still not in camp. And that being said, the last storyline is that he's basically the 14th roster spot. The Warriors have said they're going to keep the 15th one open. So he's given an opportunity to guys like Daniel House and Marcus Derrickson and Damian Lee to potentially take his spot. So it's something to look after as well. But I'm sure people that aren't locked in on the Warriors don't really worry about that 14th roster spot in Damian Lee. What needs to happen for the best case scenario? Question number two, what needs to happen for the best case scenario? I would say DeMarcus Cousins comes in and is a perfect fit. His game, they're able to integrate his game perfectly. He is able to anchor down that second unit. He's going to start, but he's going to get a lot of time with the second unit and probably be the main scoring option on that second unit. That's where a lot of his shots are going to come. So that's probably the best case scenario. Not only that, but also fits in the locker room. Doesn't complain after a game where he gets three shots or when they decide to finish a game with, you know, Andre Iguodala or Jordan Bell over him. So that's the best case scenario. And I would also throw in there that Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston, their games don't fall off a cliff, that they don't regress. There's going to be some regression because they are getting older, but as long as they're able to perform in the playoffs, and we saw that last year that they were minus Andre's injury, but he's proven that he knows his body and knows when he's able to turn it on and save himself for the playoffs. And Sean was great in the playoffs last year. I think he hit something like 17 straight shots for the Warriors in the finals. So as long as they can continue their level of play and DeMarcus Cousins fits in, that's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario would be pretty much the opposite of what I just said. DeMarcus Cousins, his game doesn't work with the Warriors. He can't get up and down the court. He complains about not getting the ball. He's not getting enough touches. He doesn't fit well in the locker room. All those things. But the positive to that for the Warriors is he's not on a max deal. It's a one-year deal for $5 million. So if they need to, they can just move on. But that would be the worst-case scenario. Andre and Sean's games do regress heavily. And, you know, let's say Kevin Durant also gets upset about being in Golden State. No inclinations that would happen with KD, but we're talking worst-case scenarios here, so that would be one of them. Player most likely to be thought of differently at the end of the season? That's a good question. I would say Boogie, but there's a chance that if it goes poorly, he's going to be thought of the same way as he was before the season. For those of you who don't know, Boogie is DeMarcus Cousins. So I will go with Jordan Bell, I think. I think Jordan Bell is going to take a step forward. He's going to be a more prominent player and be a bigger part of the Warriors than people would have imagined. His game has grown a little bit. He's got himself a little 15-foot elbow jumper that he did not have before. Defensively, he's a menace, high energy. As long as he can stay healthy, I think it'll be Jordan Bell. Player 1A, I'll call him 1A. 1B would be Quinn Cook, because I do think Quinn Cook is going to have a solid year for the Warriors, probably a double-digit scorer. I think he's someone that will be looked at as an asset for other teams after this year when he becomes a, I think, restricted free agent. Number 5, player whose career trajectory is most impacted by this season, either good or bad. This is the one where I'll throw in Boogie. It's DeMarcus Cousins. Because if it works out, he's going to be looked at a lot more positively than before. Because this is also part image rehab for him. It's not just about come in, play well, possibly win a championship. It's also come in, play well, prove that I can be a solid locker room presence on a good team. So if it all works out, it'll be his trajectory will be impacted positively. If not, probably negatively, obviously. So there it is for Boogie. I think there's a lot riding on this year. I think we all can agree with that. Rookies who will have an impact and how much? Kind of tough. The Warriors do only have one rookie on the roster at this point. But with Pat McCaw's situation and another two-way contract out there that they haven't filled and an open 15th roster spot, we'll see who it is. You know, Marcus Derrickson could possibly fill that spot, one of those spots, one of those numerous spots. But the only rookie they have for sure is Jacob Evans. And depending on what happens with Pat McCaw, he could have a bigger impact than we would have expected. He hasn't really wowed during the offseason. He's gone, I think, 3-for-21 from three so far, which is a tough, tough look. They're going to need him to be able to knock down threes. But I think his most value comes with his defensive play. And then he's not a rookie, but I will also throw Damian Jones in there. It's his third year in the league, but this is his first year that he's actually going to be, you know, on the roster suited up every game. He spent his first 2 years in Santa Cruz, their G League affiliate. And I think he'll have a solid impact. I think he will take that role, that JaVale McGee role, because athletically he can fill it. And I also, he has some brain lapses like JaVale McGee does. But he does have a higher ceiling than JaVale. So it'll be interesting to see what Damian Jones does, but he's not a rookie, so it'll have to be Jacob Evans. There will be some impact, but how much, it's tough to say. I mean, Pat McCaw's biggest impact came his rookie year when he got a random 5-minute run during the finals. So it's hard to see how it'll work out with Jacob Evans, and Steve Kerr is not afraid to put people in positions where he could have a big impact in a short time. But Jacob Evans, I think, is definitely going to be part of the rotation this year. Best guess on how the season ends. I know some people are going to hate it, but I think a championship. I mean, they've won 3 out of the last 4. They've won back-to-back. I have a hard time seeing how they got any worse this year. I think their biggest challenger, the Rockets, did get worse. The Celtics are very intriguing, but they also have some things to figure out as well. And they'd be a first-time team going to the finals, which I do think is, it's not impossible to overcome, but it is a hurdle. So I would say another championship. I mean, why not? There's no reason for me to think otherwise. So there it is. That is the Golden State Warriors season preview for Locked On NBA. I'm Charles T. Hamilton. Check out Locked On Warriors on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Thanks, and to no surprise, points gained agrees. The Warriors are just in a completely different class. So much so, let me see if I can describe how much of a different class the Warriors are in because they're two most efficient players that are out there. Steph Curry is the number one points gained player in the NBA. With his 19.5 scoring opportunities a game, he's 4.7 points better than league average. He's by far the best offensive player in the league. Kevin Durant is second at 3.5. The two of them are combined 8.2 points gained above average. If you look at this statistic as you begin to understand it, there are 10 players in the NBA that are 2 or higher in points gained. Those 10 are Curry, Durant, Harden, Karl Anthony Towns, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Kyrie, Rudy Gobert, Clint Capella, and then Giannis Antetokounmpo is 1.9. So there's actually 9. These guys, the two of them, are 8.2 above. You've got to match that somehow before you actually even count Klay Thompson. And they have very few negative players. And there's no way to catch them and add up 8.2 when there's only 8 other players in the league that are actually over 2. You can't get there with a bunch of guys at 1.3, 1.4. There just aren't that many players. It's just an incredible mismatch numbers game. There's just no way to catch the Warriors. From a fantasy standpoint, they're beautiful as well.
With a team with 2 top 5 potential guys on their squad in Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry, the Golden State Warriors players are getting a little bit undervalued in fantasy. People are extremely scared of rest days coming for these guys. I'm not as worried as others, and I think that those players in the top 8, yeah, they absolutely should be taking in that zone and probably in the top 6 as well. I do worry about Draymond Green a little bit. I think he gets a little bit overvalued in fantasy. The lack of points is hard to make up for later in drafts, but in the third round, he's still pretty strong. Whereas DeMarcus Cousins, we know we're getting these promising reports of him returning, but when he returns, I don't think he'll be the same guy or play the full load of minutes, and I wouldn't want to take him inside my top 100. Klay Thompson going at pick 28 on Yahoo is ridiculously high in my opinion. I don't think that he's going to be anywhere near the top 30 or even top 40 for this season. He scores, and he scores well, we know that, but the other numbers are lacking, and if the usage does drop off with DeMarcus Cousins when he finally arrives or starts playing, it will Thompson take something of a back seat. Now, he can say he won't sacrifice, but losing one shot per game actually has an impact. So I think Klay is getting a little bit overrated. Damian Jones could be the starting center. It could be Kevon Looney. It could be Jordan Bell. Bell has got by far the highest upside of those guys for fantasy, so he is a late round type of a guy, whereas Andre Iguodala, not someone you want to really mess with too much in fantasy. Quinn Cook has some upside on those nights where Steph Curry is out, but he is more of a deeper league type of a player.
We have done the top of the East, Western Conference to start it off. We have two teams left. In the old days of Candlestick Park in the Bay Area, which was this awful stadium that existed, it was cold and windy and awful. And if there was an extra inning game and you stayed till the end, they gave you this Croxton Candlestick like pin. It was like this code of honor that you stayed through the cold and the wet air and off the bay and how awful it was and that you were. We should be giving any of you that have done all five of these shows that same pin. We super appreciate your commitment. The Timberwolves and the Spurs are next. We kept pushing the Timberwolves preview back and back and back and back, thinking there might be some news. Oh, there's been news, but no trades. So in the midst of all of it, Colton Molesky tries to tell us a preview for the Jimmy Butler-led Minnesota Timberwolves.
Hello, this is Colton Molesky, host of the Locked On Wolves podcast, and I am here to get you prepped and prepared for the Minnesota Timberwolves season. I'm going to give you a little bit of review of what happened over the summer leading up to the season, some things that would help lead to the best case scenario versus the worst case scenario for the Timberwolves, and get into trajectories and all that for the Timberwolves 2018-2019 season. First, let's get into the storylines. A lot of this is going to be pretty obvious because of the news that's been breaking over the last couple of weeks, but obviously, right off the bat, Jimmy Butler wanting and asking to get traded, huge storyline for the Timberwolves. Combine that with his attack of a lot of the players, especially a lot of the key players. You have Wiggins, you have Towns, all these guys he was skeptical of their ability to get ready for the next season. He was critical of their attempts to prepare for games. All that leading up, of course, to the request for a trade, the progression that has led to the total meltdown in practice. It's all been a major storyline for the Timberwolves for obvious reasons. This is the best player on the roster who they're going to have to find a trade partner for. So them struggling through that has been a storyline. And I think another thing with that too is the new crop of new guys. Kind of the underlying story of the summer is the new crop of rookies and young talent on this team that aren't named Tyus or Towns or Wiggins, paired with some older faces. You got Derrick Rose coming back. Luol Deng is joining the fold through free agency. So a lot of veterans sticking around. Taj Gibson, Jeff T going to be there for the next team for the next year as well, mixed with this young talent. And then you have this around a base of Towns and Wiggins and all that kind of in the background to the Jimmy Butler drama. Those have been the big storylines of the summer. And then that kind of leads perfectly into best case scenario. So out of all this, what's the best case scenario? Well, obviously, the best case scenario is it's kind of 1A, 1B. 1A would be trading Jimmy Butler to anyone and getting any return back for him. If you keep him on the team, this is going to continue to devolve and continue to get uglier and become uglier as both sides just grow more sour. Jimmy Butler's already pretty sour, but it just continues to get uglier. There's not a path where this gets better if Jimmy Butler's still part of the Timberwolves in the coming few days here as we grow ever closer to the NBA season kicking off. 1B, however, would be Towns fully coming into his own. We saw pieces of it. You saw streaks of it from the December-January run last season to when Jimmy Butler went out the second time for 19 games. You saw these flashes of Towns taking over as the superstar that you kind of assume he'll grow into. You hope he'll assume that he'll grow into. If he can capture that and capture that more consistently throughout this season, that's also kind of the best case scenario, is that they have a team that's built around a Towns that can find and access that superstar instinct, that superstar talent and drive in a game, along with getting some pieces back for Jimmy Butler and getting that drama out of here so they can focus on the next leg of the Minnesota Timberwolves franchise. And then on the flip side, that worst case scenario is namely Jimmy Butler stays around. Jimmy Butler stays around. I know these are kind of nearsighted, or at least the Jimmy Butler aspect is, but it's so prevalent for the trajectory of the rest of the season. And it's so crazy that the course of the rest of the season could be decided as easily as, oh, Jimmy Butler's in camp on this team for the next month, or Jimmy Butler's out of town in the next 2 days. It's crazy how that can swing a huge chunk of the season, but that probably has the biggest impact, honestly, on what's going to go down for at least up until the trade deadline of this NBA season. It's crazy. So that's definitely the biggest worst case scenario is Jimmy Butler sticks around. And I would say another way this goes sour is if they do trade Jimmy Butler, but they stick to the same type of basketball that they played last year. Half court offense that took place at the very end of a shot clock. And they slowed pace way down. They didn't take advantage of the deep roster they had. All of those factor into how this team misses the playoffs. And while Jimmy Butler is a big part, Jimmy Butler's trade is a big part of what could make this season really good or really bad. Another big part is growth from this team and the ability to use an entire roster versus five guys or six guys. And so I think that has a big role in it as well, as I'm sure anybody who's watched the Timberwolves at all would agree with. The player who I think, moving on from just overall stuff, the player I think will be viewed through a different lens following this season, I think, is Tyus Jones. I really do. I think you've seen him take a little bit more of an earnest step in trying to get more involved as a scorer, not just a playmaker on offense. I think you see that grow. I think that Derrick Rose and Teague playing together, I know it was kind of out of necessity because Jimmy Butler, obviously the fiasco with Jimmy Butler happened right before training camp, or at least we're led to believe it happened right before preseason training camp. But nevertheless, I don't want to get into it here. Derrick Rose and Jeff Teague starting next to each other, maybe that means there's a possibility for a little flexibility as far as how many point guards Tibbs is letting on the floor and his willingness to maybe throw a couple more out there. I think Tyus Jones, I think everybody was a year early in predicting the breakout. I think this is the year. There's a little more flexibility. The roster needs to move around a little bit more because the starting five isn't as locked in as it was last year now with Jimmy Butler wanting to trade. And so Tyus Jones gets some more minutes right as he's starting to kind of see the upswing in his offensive ability and capability. And the result of that is a really big boom for Tyus Jones, and we see him as more of a complete, well-rounded player as versus just a guy who can create turnovers and then facilitate some offense. We see him as more of a complete NBA player. And then I think the other thing as far as just players that this kind of leads into, and I was talking about this with Towns, is trajectory. What player has the biggest trajectory swing this season? I think that it could possibly be Towns. I really hope it's Towns. I think if Towns gets out to a hot start, it builds confidence. It starts showing that superstar talent that he has and unleashes it consistently and knows when and how to unleash it in specific games and specific moments. Then I think that his trajectory could be sped up again. I think that people kind of pulled back on him. You saw it in the GM survey. But two seasons ago, he was one of the top players that GMs would want to start a franchise with. Last year, he wasn't even on the list. It took a major drop. And so now I think you see him take a jump back up there in the career trajectory just with how he plays now that he is once again the number one player on this team. I think that stuff matters, and I think you see him spread his wings a little bit more. And again, having a good offensive system around him would definitely help with that as well. As far as the rookies, I really think that Josh Okogie is gonna be a key for this defense if they're going to hang on at all. The defense wasn't great last year. Now you're losing your best defensive player. Josh Okogie has to come into his own very quickly, at least on one side of the ball, to help this Timberwolves out. They don't need him to be crazy good offensively, but they do need him to do some things defensively that's going to help them kind of stabilize the ship after losing their top defensive players, in Jimmy Butler. And so him developing quickly and learning things quickly on the defensive end is going to be key for the Timberwolves right out the gate. And then finally, prediction for this season, I think they end up as the seventh seed. I really do. I think that there's a ton of talent on this roster, and it just is hard for me to believe that stuff doesn't get moved around. They've got so much young talent. They've got such a deep roster, and they've got enough veterans around that they want to play minutes, but not they can't take a bunch of minutes and throw them on those guys, those veteran shoulders. I think that there's going to be a little bit better of a share of the load as far as game to game goes. And I think that because of that, there's an opportunity because of how versatile this roster is. They just open up the minutes a little more. And there's a real possibility to be actually pretty creative with this basketball team and have it be really a really fun basketball team to watch and a really exciting basketball team. And so I think that's good enough for a 7th, 6th seed right in there. And I think they end up grabbing a 7th seed. And I don't think they drop the 8th seed this year. I know it's not a huge bump up if they're grabbing the 7th or even the 6th seed, but I still think they make the playoffs even though it's a crowded field in the West. And I still think that this team is going to give you reasons to watch going into this season outside of just the off-court drama. So there you go. There's your preview and predictions for the 2018-2019 for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Make sure if you want to hear more Timberwolves content to check out the Locked On Wolves podcast. As always, we're part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thanks for listening.
Hard to tell what's going to happen in Minnesota. Points gained knows none of the drama, just knows the numbers. And has Minnesota actually slipping offensively from last year's brilliant campaign where they were the fourth best offensive team in the NBA and has them fifth in the entire Western Conference behind Denver, Golden State, Houston, and the New Orleans Pelicans? One of the reasons why is some of their changes. Derrick Rose getting the minutes of Tyus Jones is a negative points gained. Luol Deng coming in, minus 1.3 points gained 2 years ago when he last played, is a negative. Anthony Tolliver is a nice addition in that. And Karl Anthony Towns is the fourth best offensive player in the NBA. Jimmy Butler's a positive, 1.3. Taj is positive. Jeff Teague was right on league average. And Andrew Wiggins was just miserable last year. Minus 1.8. He had a bigger negative impact than Carmelo Anthony did in his season with Oklahoma City. So they see that. Then you couple that Minnesota's defense has just been bad, and I see nothing that changes that projection. They suddenly come in as the fifth best offense, the 12th ranked defense, and they, if that in the Western Conference, 9th ranked offense overall, 23rd ranked defense overall, it has them out of the playoff picture even before all of this drama. That the defense just simply has to improve. Denver's defense, which was less good than Minnesota's, works its way up and gets to Minnesota, and their offense is better, so they're ahead of them in the standings. Portland, ahead of them in the standings because they're a good defensive team. San Antonio, before the DeJounte Murray injury, was ahead of them in the standings, so that could change things and move Minnesota in. But Minnesota last year was number 3 in the West, then Jimmy Butler got hurt, and you know they can't beep and win without him. You need me. Okay, never mind. But the projection shows that this could be a tough playoff battle for Minnesota. I was really surprised by that. From a fantasy standpoint, let's hear what Josh Lloyd has to say.
The Minnesota Timberwolves, who knows what's going to be happening with this team. At this point, Karl Anthony Towns should be the number 3 player in fantasy basketball. His value does rise if Jimmy Butler does leave, or you know, or when Jimmy Butler leaves, to be more precise. Towns is going to be a guy who's going to score really efficiently, get rebounds. Hopefully he can get his shot block numbers up to what they were in his rookie season as well. And maybe with Butler gone, his assist numbers rise also. So he is locked in as the number 3 guy, I believe, for this season. Butler, no matter where he ends up, I think he is going to be that player who is in the, say, 12 to 16 type of range. I doubt he'll play as many minutes on another team as what he does under Thibodeau, but maybe that can be offset by the fact that maybe he will be around to play in the fantasy playoffs in February and March, which has been an issue for him in previous seasons. Jeff Teague and Andrew Wiggins would both stand to get a bump if Butler, or when Butler does leave. Wiggins was horrendous last season, but He's still getting picked around the top 80 for this season, nowhere near that level last year. But if he can get back to being a 20-point-per-game scorer and rise his free-throw percentage up to what it was in the seasons prior to last year, then his value does rise back to being a top 100-ish type of guy, while Teague could very well be a top 50 guy again. And he's actually a pretty decent value play as the 65th ranked player on Yahoo at the moment. I wouldn't be looking at drafting Derrick Rose or Taj Gibson on this team, while Tyus Jones needs a starting role to become a top 100 relevant type of a player. As we're well aware, the bench, they just don't really do very much on a Tom Thibodeau coached team.
Oh yeah, the Tom Thibodeau lack of defensive rotations. Final stop, the San Antonio Spurs. DeJounte Murray injury is crushing. Jeff Garcia gives us the breakdown.
Hey there, this is Jeff Garcia of Locked On Spurs, here to give you your Spurs 2018-19 season preview. The Spurs head into the new season with a lot of question marks and basically a lot of what could have been. In the offseason, the Spurs saw one of the top players in the league, Kawhi Leonard, be dealt to the Raptors, along with Danny Green. So, A, can the Spurs survive without a top-tier talent like Leonard? And B, as I mentioned, Danny Green, his defense, as well as Kyle Anderson, who left to Memphis as a free agent. And you put that all together, and that's a lot of defense that left the San Antonio window. So, can the Spurs defense rise to the occasion? And if that wasn't bad already for San Antonio, now comes the news that DeJounte Murray has suffered a torn ACL. And although the Spurs put no timetable, Popovich did say that he fears that Murray will be out for the rest of the NBA season. So that leaves the Spurs with a lot of what ifs. What if they were able to smooth things over with Kawhi Leonard? What if they kept Danny Green? What if DeJounte Murray was at full strength? So the Spurs now come into the season scrambling. What can they do? They lost one of the up-and-coming point guards in the league, and you add the fact that he can play defense. He was named to the All-NBA second defensive team last year, and they play in a Western Conference loaded with top echelon guards such as Donovan Mitchell, Westbrook, James Harden, Chris Paul, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry. You see where I'm going with this. The Spurs lost themselves a young, budding NBA star in DeJounte Murray. Can the Spurs now just simply hang on and survive in a crowded West when they're coming in already hobbled to begin the season? So what is the best case scenario for San Antonio? Well, simply survive. Simply being in the thick of things. Before the Murray injury, I have the Spurs fighting for at least 5th through 7th slot in the NBA's Western Conference. Now, I'm hoping they just simply make the postseason, and I think they'll be fighting for a 7th or 8th seed. But it's going to be a tough road to hoe. Add the fact that they bring in all-star guard DeMar DeRozan in the trade with Toronto. He's going to need time to figure his way into the Spurs system and get adjusted to a new life, new atmosphere, new team after 9 seasons in Toronto. The Spurs brought in a bunch of new guys and familiar faces, Marco Bellinelli. They added Quincy Pondexter. They bring in Jakob Poeltl, who was part of the Spurs-Raptors offseason mega deal. So there's a lot of moving parts that the Spurs have to deal with. You add the fact, too, that they already lost rookie Lonnie Walker to the injury bug as well. Again, with an injury, and he's out for 6 to 8 weeks. The Spurs are simply coming in already, the walking wounded. So they're already behind the eight ball, so to speak. San Antonio will simply just have to survive. And if they make the postseason, I call that a win in the best case scenario. And it goes without saying the worst case scenario is the Spurs see their over 2-decade playoff appearances come to an end. And simply because they've just been ravaged by injury to DeJounte Murray. And, of course, losing Kawhi Leonard and a boatload of defense, as mentioned. That will be the worst-case scenario for a team and a franchise that has been the pillar of excellence on and off the court, always being in the thick of things. But as they say, count the Spurs out at your own peril. Will this be the year that they actually do and miss the postseason? As of right now, it's not looking good, and that would be the worst-case scenario for the Silver and Black. player likely to be looked at the end of the season differently, I think it would be Derek White. With the injury to Walker and Murray, the Spurs have a big gaping void at the point guard spot. Enter Derek White. Now, Derek White has been excelling in the G League as he led the Austin Spurs to the 2018 G League title. He shined in the Summer League. He even got a Team USA camp invite right before Spurs training camp got underway. So there's a lot of promise in him. And the Spurs will definitely need him. He is a true point guard. He's a big point guard. He's like 6 foot four. He can distribute the ball. He can get to the rim. He has a good shot. His defense is still not there. But nevertheless, I think now that he's going to be thrusted into the spotlight and as the floor general and as a player that the team and Popovich will be looking at to guide the team on the court, I think it's going to be a trial by fire. He has what it takes. He's shown that he has the chops outside the NBA. Now that he's going to be looked at in the NBA level more so, I think he's going to rise to the occasion and be looked at differently once the regular season comes to an end. And as far as the rookies are concerned, as mentioned, Lonnie Walker, he's out for a period of time, so it's an incomplete. The Spurs also drafted big man Chimezie Metu out of FSU. He'll likely be relegated to the Austin Spurs in the G League. So right now, hey, you know, it's really hard to project how the Spurs rookies will fare, and I don't think they'll have much of an impact. One, they play again with Popovich in the Popovich system, and he likes to let rookies develop, whether that be riding the bench and learning or out in Austin in the G League. So, hard to say how much the Spurs rookies will make an impact. Now, a player who could be in the spotlight and see his career trajectory be impacted either good or bad, I think would have to be Jakob Poeltl. As mentioned, Poeltl was thrown into the deal between the Spurs and Raptors in the Kawhi Leonard DeMar DeRozan trade. And after two seasons in Toronto, he showed a lot of promise. And as a matter of fact, a lot of sports critics are looking at Poeltl as kind of a gem, a diamond in the rough. He is a big man. He is exactly what the Spurs need with an aging Pau Gasol, because after Gasol, the depth at big man at the five spot pretty much plummets. Promising guy, can run the pick and roll, can get to the rim, can block shots, can play defense. It's exactly what the Spurs need in the Popovich Spurs system. But will he rise to the occasion? He doubled his scoring output last season in Toronto. He upped his rebounding. He upped his field goal percentage. So far in the preseason, he's shown glimmers of it, but he has yet to show that upside, so to speak, that many are looking at that he has within him. So Jakob Poeltl, I think we'll keep an eye on him and see how he projects out as his NBA career rolls on. And finally, considering the fact that the Spurs are just simply ravaged with injuries heading into the regular season, losing a boatload of defense, losing Kawhi Leonard, I think at the end of the day, the Spurs probably will not make the postseason in a very crowded Western Conference. It's just unfortunate that DeJounte Murray got hurt. Spurs will be fighting for an 8 seed. I think it'll come down to one of those last game decisions, you know, but depending how the math works out. I hate to see the Spurs see their postseason streak snap, but as of right now, it's projecting out to be that way. Throw in the fact that this is a brand new team, brand new roster. They need time to develop some cohesion. It may be too little too late by the time they get their chemistry down. So I'm looking at the Spurs to put on a good fight. But at the end of the day, maybe miss the postseason just by a hair. And that has been your Spurs 2018-19 outlook. Make sure to go listen to Locked On Spurs.
The question on the Spurs and points gained is simply, what are they defensively? Murray was an elite, maybe the best defensive point guard in the league. And the Spurs came out in our projections as fifth best defensive team in the league, and that got them into the playoffs with ease. The other thing on the Spurs, they lost a lot of names, Manu and Tony and Danny Green and guys that we're so used to having there, but they were all negative points gained players by the end. And so the Spurs are replacing most of these guys with positive points gained players. DeMar DeRozan is not particularly efficient, but he's right on league average. Derek White could be really good. LaMarcus Aldridge is a positive. Bellinelli's a positive. Davis Bertans is a positive. There's a little Jakob Poeltl's a very good positive, 1.1. Dante Cunningham's even. Rudy Gay's right about even. Pau Gasol's right about even. There's a little bit of a New Orleans Pelicans element to this team that they may not have anybody who's a significant negative using possessions. Really, DeJounte Murray was the only one. So the Spurs, I think, offensively, despite the plethora of mid-range shots, and they're taking 55% of their shots in the preseason as non-restricted area or non-threes, so non-restricted area twos, 55% of their shot. The Rockets took 20% last year. They may be able to survive as an average or slightly above-average offensive team. So if they're able to hold defensively, then they end up being a playoff team. DeJounte Murray's injury actually propels them offensively into a much higher stratosphere. Now, who's going to use those possessions? And if it's Derek White, maybe they're all right. But suddenly the Spurs jump a decent amount up into the without DeJounte Murray, who is the one negative, the Spurs move to become the seventh best offensive team in the conference, the 14th, and they still, you know, if they're a top 10 defense, they still make the playoffs. Crazy as that sounds. Let's go to Josh Lloyd for our final fantasy look.
A different San Antonio Spurs team this season. I think LaMarcus Aldridge will take a little bit of a step back, having to share the offensive load with DeMar DeRozan. He's still really strong for his high efficiency, high field goal percentage, high free throw percentage in that third round type of an area. In the 30s is the right spot for Aldridge. I think DeMar DeRozan is being ridiculously overvalued on ESPN, ranked 16th. No need to be taking him there. That's expecting him to take a massive, massive leap from where he was last season. And I just don't see how it's going to happen. I think that he's a player who could struggle to be a top 50 guy for this coming season in a slower paced San Antonio offense. Where is he going to take these big, big leaps forward to become this guy that even at pick 32 on Yahoo seems a little bit high? DeJounte Murray, starter at the end of last season, really stepped up. I think he's got a shot to be a top 60 guy this year. Not your traditional point guard, high rebounds, steals, blocks, doesn't hit threes, doesn't get many assists, but should see an increase in his value this season and really, really good value pick. 111th on Yahoo, he is definitely going to beat that number. So one of the best guys you should be targeting in those mid to late rounds. I also think Rudy Gay is undervalued. 141 on Yahoo. He should be their starting small forward. They don't really have any threes on the roster. He's going to have an opportunity to play more minutes than he did last season and should be a very, very valuable late round pick. While Pau Gasol and Jakob Poeltl battling out for those center minutes. I think that Poeltl is obviously on the way up. Gasol's on the way down. If I'm going to take one of those guys with my last pick, it's going to be Poeltl because there is upside, whereas Gasol, we don't really see him getting too much better than what he currently is, plus the risk of him getting worse and rest days coming into play as well. A flyer type guy you may want to look at is Derek White, but I don't think he's going to really be a standard league relevant guy for this season.
So to wrap up the Western Conference, here's what we have. Warriors at 1, Jazz at 2 by a smidge over the Rockets, Pelicans as the surprising 4, Thunder if the defense is actually ranked in the top 5, Portland at 5, Thunder at 6, Spurs holding at 7, and the Clippers and Nuggets matching up at 8, with the Nuggets getting the edge, but the two of them very similar. That has Minnesota, LA, Lakers out of the playoffs, according to points gained. Probably a lack of understanding on LeBron. Interesting to see if that happens with Minnesota. Tom Thibodeau would certainly be in a world of trouble. And no surprising upstart from Dallas or Memphis or someone like that. That wraps up 30 teams in 5 days, 6 a day, from the local experts, the Locked On Podcast Network, here on Locked On NBA.